Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hey everyone, welcome to the 279th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by Zach Freshley. I'm Oren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Emma. Today we've got our old pal Carlin Hudson back on the mic. Say hi.
Very old pal.
The oldest friend they have. The oldest.
Anyway, we're here to talk about a few listener questions focusing on the relationship between directors and actors. So we're going to dive into some of those, maybe even talk a little bit more about a class that I'm teaching today and for the next few weeks with actors. So it's kind of a perfect little opportunity to just talk about the collaboration between directors and maybe the most important collaborators of all, actors, the people in front of the camera. We talk about DPs, we talk about art, we talk about all those other wonderful department heads, but actors are front and center, literally, right?
Yeah, I mean, I like to put them like in, you know, rule of thirds compositionally, but
hey man,
your YouTube videos.
I'm aiming for that A24 video, that A24 life.
Front and center.
Front and center, 4x3. Lots of headroom, symmetrical center punch.
I literally did just do this shot. And the client was like, we need a different shot. And I was like, but it's cool.
You're like, it's so cool.
Wait, no way. The client didn't like a centered shot.
Really, they didn't.
Who's your client?
No, I can't tell you. I can't. It was the diamond shoot. They wanted a slightly different angle. And I had this very like, it doesn't matter. It was like a Coen Brothers-y. They were twins. The guy was like in between the twins. Mm-hmm. I thought it was cool. And anyways, it's going in the director's cut, but it may not make their cut.
They thought compositionally they didn't like the
shot? Yeah, they thought it was too symmetrical. They wanted to try it a little more like off kilter.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
For a second there, I was like, I never get notes on composition from clients and stuff. But now that I think about it, I get notes on composition that they don't realize are notes on composition.
Oh, sure.
Like, that doesn't really look like our brand, or that's like, I just did this shoot where it was about these sports fans, and we just brought all this sports fan stuff because literally everything they told us was that this is about fandom. And then they're like, yeah, that's way too much sports fan stuff. I'm like, there's seven things. They're like, yeah, let's get it down to three.
I've been in the same situation where you kind of have one directive and then you realize like, you know, oh, their favorite color is blue. And then you only bring blue stuff. And you're like, oh, this looks like a psychopath lives here. You know, like no matter what it is, if there's just one flavor, then it just ends up being too much. You know, you have
or
to kind of
enough,
water it down.
If that's what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's a spot
still
about
defending my shot.
Your shot.
I love that shot.
Yeah. It sounds very cool.
I honestly don't know how you frame three people when two of them are twins in any other way other than putting the non-twin in the middle.
Look,
and then
I'll send you screenshots later. I think it looks cool.
Can't wait.
Well, The Shining has nothing on you. I did this shoot for Krylon spray paint, which is owned by Sherwin-Williams, which is sold at Lowe's. And so I didn't know all that stuff. And we had some orange things. We built this garage set and we had some orange things on the
some
wall.
Some Home Depot orange, like you mean?
Well, I didn't realize, but they're like, can you get rid of that caulking gun? It's like a little too orange, that lawnmower. And I was like, what is up with it? This looks so good. It's like brown and orange and it's got this like warmth. And then our characters are dressed in blue and it's just like, and they just kept giving it. And finally, like half a day into it, they're like, well, it's orange. It's like the Home Depot color. And, you know, we're like,
we're not Home
Depot.
We don't
sell. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's like bear paint or whatever.
I mean, good on Coke and Pepsi for just knowing that like they just don't want the other's color in their spots, period.
Yeah.
You know, like it's nice when it's cut and dry like that. And you're like, oh, yeah, of course. I guess I have been programmed to think that that red is associated with Coca-Cola my entire life. I guess you guys spent $1 billion doing that. Fair mm-hmm. enough.
Yeah. I literally just did that exact thing.
Oh, sure.
Working for.
Yeah, yeah.
Working for Pepsi. And
yeah. You're like, what? A splash of red would look so good, though. I guess you guys.
I mean, you're joking, but the set, because we were mixing it with other familiar things, there was a thing that by definition was supposed to be red. Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, just make it not red.
Yeah, you're spray painting a wagon.
That tomato, it's a fried green tomato now.
Yeah, that's right.
I mean, you're joking, but honestly, it's like not, that is not a conversation that would be out of the reality of what they would
well talk. Look, I know we're gonna talk about actors in a second, but you do have to empathize with the people who are like gonna hear it from their bosses when they get the note about the tomato.
Yeah.
And they literally have spent billions of dollars to code our brains to associate those colors with refreshing cola drinks.
And there is a person whose job it is at the shoot to make sure the brand is like represented properly. And honestly, if they didn't give that note, they'd have not much to do with the shoot.
All right. Nice. Carlin, how do you feel about actors?
I feel
just the hardest transition ever.
I feel great about them. I not to brag, but as y'all know, I did go to acting school at Tisch, so I know firsthand that it is hard, and I don't do it anymore because directing is way more fun than acting. So I empathize with them.
Wait, you think so?
Yes.
Yeah, definitely.
What do you mean? Yeah, definitely. When, as an actor, you have like one responsibility. And as a director, it's like you have a bazillion responsibilities. And then people are constantly disappointed in you.
Yeah, but as an actor, you are the face of the project. I mean, we're behind the camera. No one, even though I guess also I'm just a control freak. And so being an actor is absolutely the worst place you can be if you love control.
Yeah, for a control freak.
Yeah. So for me personally, giving up control was not something that felt good to me ever. And I don't even know why I went to acting school, but it was helpful, obviously.
So well,
I like actors.
You still get a lot of positive attention, you know? Like, directors still have they're at high status on set, you know? So, you know, it's not the same sort of fun and bonding that that actors get to have on sets, but you still get a good taste of that. You get a healthy dose of being babied. So... Yeah, in a lot of ways, it's like all the upsides and none of the downsides. Like no one ever looks at your face, Carlin, then whispers to three other people who stop looking at their phone, look at the monitor, and then a makeup artist comes.
And someone with a tweezer comes and pulls a hair out of
you. Yeah, that was the worst.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah, but terrible. I think, look, acting sucks. Like everyone knows, because you're at the mercy of other people to make you good and people that... you don't know, and you just need to do anything it takes to get hired. And then, you know, odds are what you were hired for is like not that great of a thing. But as the director, it's just such a different job. I feel like you can't even compare it in terms of fun.
Yeah, that's true.
The craziest thing is when people are like act and direct, like at the same time. Oh. You know, to me, that's.
Yeah.
But we've heard Zoe Lister-Jones who said that she like directs from inside the scene, you know?
Wow.
Like she's setting the pace and the tone and everything by acting with the other actors. And so there is a directing that goes on there also, which is fun. But anyway, so we got a question from an actor, a real life actor, John Winter. And I looked him up and he's totally acted in things. You guys heard of Vampire Diaries?
Indeed.
Yes.
He was in that. And he's actually acted in a ton of TV shows and a ton of things. And so it's pretty cool that he listens to our podcast.
Yeah, well, he had multiple questions in the same voicemail. So let's dive into the first one, huh?
Here it is.
Hey, Matt and Oren. My name is John Winter. I'm an actor living in South Georgia. I've done some guest stars, a couple of recurrings. You know, I've been at it for 12 years. And I've heard the direction, pick up the pace. And in my very limited experience of editing, from what I understand, that if I'm taking long pauses in between lines or there's long pauses in between my lines and another actor's line, can't that just be removed in editing? And wouldn't that pick up the pace? is it maybe that when directors are saying, hey, let's pick up the pace of the scene, maybe they're saying, hey, let's pick up the energy? That's just a question to see if you can take a shot at.
Okay. How many of us have ever told an actor to pick up the pace?
Me.
Yeah.
I felt extremely called out with that question.
Is it perhaps the most common direction I've ever given by a fold of 10 times, probably? Yeah, definitely.
But we're always thinking about the edit, especially in commercials. So when you only have 30 seconds, you got to get through those lines. You got to get through there.
Whether there's a time limit or not, sometimes we're saying that it's dragging. Like in scripted, you still want to, I say, pace it up all the time.
What does pace it up mean? Is it the same thing?
Faster. Yeah.
Faster.
Yeah. That could be clearer, but it's not. So there's a couple of things in that, though. He's saying, like, well, can't you fix that in editing? So that's the easiest one, right? Carlin, go for it.
Right.
No, you can't always fix it in editing because it depends on the coverage, and our job as a director is to envision what the finished edited product is going to look like, and you may not want to cut away from it. You may have envisioned a different edit, so that's a bit short-sighted.
Right. Oren, do you want to elaborate on that?
Yeah. I mean, I guess I do use pick up the pace a lot, but I try to be more specific than that when I can, which a lot of times I'll say, like, can you pick up those cues a little faster? Which when I say that, I mean, like, the time between sentences. Mm-hmm. I want actors to kind of almost, like, be starting their sentence as the other actor finishes. And exactly for why Carlin said, like, sometimes I think if he says, what time is it? And she says 5 o'clock. Then we smash cut to the clock or whatever. Like, I don't want that to be 3 shots. I want it to be 2 shots. And I think with commercials, like, we're always, a lot of us, especially in comedy, are striving to have less cuts and not more. Mm-hmm. I know that John works mostly in TV, but I think in TV as well, you have these, especially network television, you have these hard time limits. And to know that, like, now I have to go from the medium to the tight, to the back to the medium, back to tight, back to the wide to get this information across, especially if it's exposition. Sometimes you just want your actors to get it out. And the other thing, and I learned this like a long time ago, is that the faster the dialogue is in general, the more slowing down, the more gravity it has. Mm-hmm. You know, so if you're talking really fast and then all of a sudden you slow down, you say, and this is why I'm talking about this, then it's all relative. So if you can get dialogue out pretty fast, especially if you're talking about exposition, like you're watching Law and Order or something, you know, the body was only 37 degrees, but the weird thing is that the temperature outside was 40 degrees. Like there's something about pacing. A note that I give instead of pace it up a lot of times is I talk about urgency. I say, you know, you guys have to do this before mom gets back home and she'll be home any second. Like, can we just feel like you want to get this done fast? A lot of times that note doesn't work, but
sure.
But yeah, just faster and louder, I think, is the most common note you get in TV.
There is that old story about how George Lucas lost his voice on Star Wars and he had a bell and a horn, and the bell was faster and the horn was more intense.
Is that true?
I don't know, but I repeat it all the time.
But also think about, like, saying, if I was acting this and I said, pick up the pace. And then I said, pick up the pace. You know, those are two extremely different takes. And
I 100% agree with both of you. And I want to just, because there might be people listening who don't have quite the same experience level, just to spell out the thing that we're talking about is that imagine there's a 2-shot and someone says, hey, should we pick up the pace in the 2-shot? And then we have a close-up of them saying, hey, should we pick up the pace? If there's the big pause there, that means in order to cut out the space, you have to go from the 2-shot to the single. And what if, to Carlin's point, you don't want to, because the film language of this piece is all 2 shots and you know what the next shot is going to be, or you know that you're going to be into a really cutty sequence and just a shot or two later, where it's shot, reverse shot, and you're going ping-ponging back and forth. There's a lot of different reasons why you don't want to do it. And so you can just be like, hey, take the breath out of that. Pace it up. Go faster. And that's because the director's job is to kind of see the bigger picture of how things are going to cut together. And it makes sense that the actor whose job it is to just focus on their own character can push back and say, well, I think maybe the character would be thoughtful about this moment. The reason I'm putting this pause in there is because I'm thinking about it, or I want you to see the thoughts or whatever. That, you know, you can get into actory stuff on that. But sometimes there's just the clinical thing of like, I need you to go faster for reasons that I don't have time to explain.
Mm-hmm. Right. Which is, you kind of don't have time to explain almost always when you're on set. Previous guest, Matt Barber, who has directed and edited a ton of shows like The 100, Chuck, Lethal Weapon, he always says that if a line is important, you should cut to the close-up for when a character is saying it. And it's more of a TV thing, I believe, than, you know, a cinema
sure,
thing.
Sure, but you can think about, like, you know, cut to they're dead or whatever. It has more impact right. than, like, the wide, they're dead, you know. That's not just performance.
Right.
Right.
And so you're trying to take the air out of things to make a scene shorter, you have to get more information out, or you did some ADR and you're trying to squeeze things in, whatever reason you need to make a scene shorter. Now you're forced to go to the close up. You've lost that tool of being able to cut to the close up for the important line. Mm. So
good point.
Yeah. And the reason I say urgency instead of pace it up is, you know, trying to give them an intention as opposed to like a result, mm-hmm. but it's the same exact note. It's like, hey, we got to get through this quick. And however you find a way to do that.
Yeah. And we talk about being director proof. And I know in like acting school, sometimes people talk about that as well. There are plenty of directors out there that are going to give you results oriented directing. And part of the importance of training is to be able, it's not like a day player on a TV show can be like, can you, like, what's my motivation? That's like going to be a rough time for you. You're not going to be the most popular person on set, but you need to have the tools to say, okay, the director does need this result. I'm going to reverse engineer it in the background to justify getting the result that they need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I do this thing, and I'm sure I've talked about it a million times on the podcast, where I try to say action in the same tone mm-hmm. that I want the actors to go. So if they are going slow, if they are kind of talking, taking their time and slowly discussing the murder that just happened, I'll say something like, okay, we're rolling. And I'll be like, okay, this is totally freaky. And like, you guys have no idea what to do, but you got to do it fast. Ready? And action.
Yeah.
And if I want them to take their time more, I'll be like, okay, so you guys are just getting to know each other. Take your time, feel each other out, and action. I don't know if that helps at all, but that's like one thing I do as a director. I don't know if actors appreciate it or they even care, but
I think setting a tone is great.
Set pace like that too.
That reminds me of in film school, we had a teacher who said that exact thing. But so this was like a lab class, so there was like 30 of us, and he made us all go around the room and say action with a different intention, but it wasn't assigned. It wasn't like I have the quiet scene or the silent scene or whatever. And so I just kind of remember like 18-year-old kids just kind of all
action,
just trying to find their own spin. And those poor people at the end of the line, just like, well, everyone said the loud or quiet version. I guess I'll go silly. I don't know. Oh, it was really funny. So funny. Yeah.
The accent,
but maybe we found something special. I don't remember. Maybe there was a good one in there.
I'm sure you did.
That is a fun exercise. Yeah. Okay, let's play John's next question.
I find it very helpful for me to come up and watch a playback of the scene, and this may be my own, like, you know, making myself small on a big set, but I don't have that much confidence to necessarily stop everybody, you know, on a Vampire Diaries and say, hey, I gotta watch the take now. You know, it's hard for me to kind of get that confidence sometimes. So how do you feel about actors, or what are your thoughts on actors requesting playbacks? Because it really helps me. Often it's a technical thing. I can be like, oh, I see now. I get it. Let's do it again. And, you know, I can help get the job done and move on.
Okay, so John's next question is about being unsure if it's acceptable for him to ask directors on busy sets if he can watch a playback of himself, because he finds that helpful for his performance. Mm-hmm. So I've never heard of that before. What do you guys think?
I think it's also worth it to slice it up into three different scenarios. Your network TV show or cable TV show, like a big time TV show, we'll say, one people have seen and have heard of. Your independent film or web series or something where you have more control, right? Like something that you own, I guess is what I'm trying to get at. And then a commercial.
Right.
Have you ever heard of, or have you ever allowed that in any of those circumstances?
No one. I found this. This is a wild question to me. I was like, what? No one has ever asked me that. That is, I respect him for asking the question. I think it's an interesting one, but man, we don't have time. And the only time that would be appropriate to ask is if I had like a long relationship with them, I think. And if we talked about this like before we shot or during lunch or on a break or something, but like in the moment while we're shooting, definitely feels inappropriate to me, if I'm being totally frank.
Yeah.
And I don't, and I know, Matt, you kind of presented these different scenarios, but unless it's like, hey, we did a couple takes and now we need to wait for the sun to move down for the next 45 minutes. I can't think of any scenario, even if it was like my short film, where I would be like, oh yeah, let's just hang out and watch playback. Unless it was something super technical, like we're shooting a slow motion shot and they have to throw this thing and it needs to pass camera. I mean, that happens all the time. Yeah. Right? So for something like that, we would look at playback.
Right. I typically wouldn't even do playback on that. I just have somebody turn a monitor around so that they could like put their finger on the right spot or whatever. So there's a couple things that we're talking about here. And I'm glad, Carlin, that the thoughtful and diplomatic Carlin Hudson is here, because my knee-jerk reaction was like, no! I was like that. I didn't want to be too much on that. But, and I think there are actually some circumstances where maybe it works out. But if you're an EP on a TV show, you're allowed to, you can watch playback. If you're Andy Samberg in Brooklyn Nine-Nine, for sure. But he also knows, I'm not just generally speaking, those EPs know how crazy the schedule is and aren't going to take the time to do that. If you were a day player on a show or even a series regular, don't ask for it because of schedule. But also, I remember when I was first starting out and doing web series, where I did have a long relationship with people and it was more like schedules were looser. I was the ultimate decider of everything. It wasn't like there was a studio or a network to answer to or whatever. And I had a really personal relationship with the people. As soon as you start showing actors playback, it does slow everything down, but you're almost always looking for the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. And that's human nature. You know, like
when you say you mean actors are looking
One immediately gravitates towards whatever they're self-conscious about or the result that they're trying to push towards. I've never in my life seen somebody get better as the result of watching playback.
That's great to know. I don't even let them do it, but if you have experience and they've never gotten better, that is really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. And
I mean, I'd have to say, just to present the other side of things, I don't encourage actors to watch playback, but I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I know a lot of directors like, oh, I'm not going to let them. They're going to be in their head and they're going to be, but like everyone has a different process, you know? And I worked with an actor forever ago and I felt like she was the super likable person, but her character was just coming off as mean and I was having trouble explaining it. And then I had to show her the take and she's like, oh yeah, I guess I am kind of like making this scallop. I'll try to do it without that, you know? And even Kara, my wife, who's a great actor, she used to really have to watch her own auditions back because she was like very animated and she had to train herself to, you know, to put your arms. I'm sure, Carlin, you know, as an actor, like you see new actors and they're kind of rocking back and forth and they're nervous and they're doing these things. But yes, in the stress of a set, showing people that is usually not helpful. There's a great episode of Entourage where the director pulls Adrian Grenier's character aside and he's like, look at what you're doing with your face. This is like unwatchable. And he ruins the whole movie. But I do think that, you know, and in audition classes, and Matt, I know you're going to potentially be in doing something like this too. Actors watching their own auditions and things, just like football players watching their own, you know, game footage can be super helpful.
Yeah, yes, but not in the moment, I think.
Right.
I think in the moment is when it can get really complicated.
It is a big risk that you're taking by showing someone that.
Yeah, to the point where I kind of just have a blanket rule. Even with other actors who aren't on screen in the moment, I kind of like the monitor is for the people who need to see monitor for their job.
Yeah.
And do you agree with that, Carlin?
I do agree with that. Yeah, the only time I'll same that I'll only show an actor near the camera monitor if it's like a micro shot or like whatever.
Right, they have to their phone
an insert.
They need to lift a phone into the shot. Or
yes,
yeah.
That's the only time why I would let them look at the monitor.
Yeah,
this is a me thing. I realize, but like to me, part of the magic of being on set is looking at the camera, looking at the set, and then looking at the monitor and seeing the difference between what you see with your eyes and what you see through the camera. And yeah, when we have visitors or on set, to me, I love it when people want to look at the monitor because I feel like
actors,
they are interested.
But not like when they're in a scene.
Anyone.
When they're in the scene, you let them look at the monitor?
No, not when they're acting in a scene, but if they're not in the scene. Like we actually, I just did this thing where we had basically the same script and two different families doing the same script, but we were running so behind and the blocking was a little complicated that I was like, let's just have one family watch the blocking. We worked out the whole blocking with one family. Let's have the other family watch this, what this family does, so they know, they have a sense of it. And I was worried a little bit that they're going to like try to out act each other or do something, you know, or copy each other's performances, but it ended up not being an issue at all.
I mean, that seems so, fine. I'm just, I don't mind if people are on monitor, but I didn't mean to make it sound like I have a hard and fast rule.
Sure.
I'm not David Fincher or something. Is it David Fincher? One of these, I heard some stories about some directors who like don't have monitors on set at all.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Is that David Fincher? Who directed Dunkirk?
Chris Nolan. Yeah, yeah.
His script supervisor told me they aren't allowed to have monitors.
Huh.
This could be, I could be spreading rumors, but I've heard this.
Regardless, John, don't ask Carlin or Matt if you can watch playback. You can ask me, but 90% chance I'll say, I'm sorry.
I think that the takeaway is if you have a true honest to goodness relationship with someone, like you really know a director and you're like, hey, listen, it really is part of my process, then maybe over drinks one night you can broach that topic, you know, a couple days into an indie feature or something. I personally do not think that it is wise. I think that the best, smartest, most talented, egoless actors I have ever worked with, I think they're all human beings and they all just kind of end up thinking about, they put you in your head and I'm trying to keep you in the moment. And so anything that keeps you out of the moment, I want to avoid.
I will say if your purpose of seeing playback is technical, that I don't mind at all. I actually like when actors are saying like, what, you know, how wide is the shot? Mm-hmm. Do you see my hands down here? Do you see this? Like,
that's not playback.
I'm more than happy. No, but sometimes maybe that's why you want to see playback. Like, you know, like if you're in the frame.
Well, that's
right. Yeah. And obviously
that's worth asking then. I think that's a way to communicate. That's a way to say like, hey, just how, what are we seeing? What are we not seeing? You know, cowboy, whatever, like getting that vocabulary under your belt, I think is really smart, but that's not playback to Carlin's point.
Yeah, and I would show them maybe then a monitor quickly so they can see and then turn it back around.
I would just motion. I would just be like, the line is here, wherever the bottom of the frame is, because that's really the thing they have control over, you know.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number smart beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Yeah. Okay, John, let's hear your third question.
How do you feel about having a quick powwow with an actor right off the bat to talk about their process? I've found lately that I think I work in a more technical way. I don't mind if a director come up and says, hey, John, don't blink so much or something like that, or hey, do this again, but be more angry. Like, I don't mind that kind of direction. It's better for me than them coming up and saying, hey, remember, this guy's, you know, lived his whole life wishing that he could design cars, and now it's his first day, so don't forget that his dad also designed cars. You know, whatever that is, it gets me stuck in my head. So I want to be able to talk to a director. Any advice for me to come up to a director who's probably already in the middle of a shit show and say, hey, can I talk to you real quick? And this is how I work. And every now and then I want to do a take that's totally wrong. So request that now and then, or how do you feel about this or that? Or, hey, go ahead and come up to me and say, why don't you do it again this time? Like, you're a squirrel, you know, like that actually works for me. How do you feel about that going down? What are your thoughts?
Okay. So John's third question is about process and how much we think that actors should share their process with us on set. You know, he said that he works in a certain way where he doesn't mind very specific things like don't move your hands or don't blink or do this or be angry. Or he knows other actors don't like that as much, you know, line readings, all those things. He's asking us if it's okay for him to come up to the director and say, hey, this is how I work. Just so you know, you can do this. You can say these things to me. And I find this type of direction more helpful than other types of direction. And again, his context is he's been on a lot of TV shows, but as a guest star, a co-star, a day player. So he's not a series regular. He's less invested in the previous seasons of the show than potentially a regular actor. I don't think he's talking about a movie per se. But when, you know, I think commercials is a good example. When an actor comes up to you and says and wants to talk to you about their process, does that bother you? Is it kind of like the playback thing, or is it something that you appreciate?
This is complicated. Oh, yeah.
I know. I think short answer is I don't mind talking about process. And in fact, I like it and often will ask actors what their process is.
Mm-hmm. Even if it's like a one day shoot.
Yeah. I literally did this on Thursday. I asked, but I have a caveat is, sometimes I like to ask this question, but what I've noticed is what's happening lately is that people just are like, anything, it's great. Like, whatever you say, I'm totally mm-hmm. open. And so then I don't really learn anything. So mm-hmm. I think what's interesting about his question is saying, can I tell directors, I don't mind technical direction, I don't mind line readings. That is more useful to me. That's useful information, but recently I've asked actors this question. They're just like, yeah, cool, whatever. And mm-hmm. I'm really having trouble today. I have a headache.
I think what you're saying makes sense. And I understand there is something a little pretentious if somebody comes to you and says, just so you know, I don't mind line readings, you mm-hmm. know, like as if they are telling you how they work without you asking them how they work.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think that there is, like in a commercial, the cast of people that you're working with is probably two or three people. You know, if you were doing like a big montage-y sort of anthem piece, you're like doing a spot for Nike and it's like, okay, you're the swimmer who's going to be in a shot that lasts for 2/3 of a second. And then we're going to cut to a basketball player or whatever, you know, it's probably not worth it to have the conversations about, you know, what school you have trained under.
Right. It almost seems like as an actor, the healthiest thing for you is to kind of be bulletproof and know that there's directors that are really engaged mm-hmm. and empathetic with actors. Mm-hmm. And there are others that are not as great at being sensitive with actors, mm-hmm. but there's not one director that's not crazy busy, you know, on set. And so to me, I like to tell actors, like, hey, just so you know, for the sake of time, I might throw line readings at you. I have like agency client, a lot of people telling me they want the lines mm-hmm. like in different ways. You're doing awesome. This is amazing. But do you mind if I just kind of give you a couple things? Like, can you put the stress on this word? Can you do this? Can mm-hmm. you do that? And I feel like as long as I am validating that this is not like the best way to inspire acting, then it's okay. It's like we're on the same team.
Yeah.
And I'm just like telling mm-hmm. them like, hey, just so you know, this sucks. I'm not going to give you backstory. I'm not going to give you motivation. I'm just going to tell you how to say the line because we have 5 minutes and we need mm-hmm. to get six mm-hmm. more shots.
And so you're sort of saying like, I know that if we had more time and we have a little bit of exploration, you would bring something special to the table, but we don't have the time for that right now. And I think it's sometimes actors, because they're so deprived of the understanding of like logistics and all of the other things that film production has to deal with, it can feel unfair, or just they're kept in the dark on things. So like it just seems like, oh, a director's just being brusque with me for no reason. But Oren, I really like that answer, because the idea of just leveling with someone relatively quickly, I think, opens the lines of communication in a way that's really transparent, mm-hmm. But really efficient. And I think that, you know, sometimes I'll say, like, if I'm not giving you any direction, that means you're nailing it, you're doing it right. And that can be...
You say that out loud to them.
Sometimes, hopefully I'm thoughtful enough to do it. Yeah, sometimes, like, typically it'll happen after someone's like, hey, was that okay? I'll be like, yes, I loved it. That's why we're not worried about it right now. Like, the biggest compliment I can pay is moving on, is something that I'll say to people. And that's a little short-sighted, frankly. Like, it's a habit that I'm actively trying to work past, because people don't understand that, and you don't get the best work out of people that way. But it is that balancing act of, like, we don't have enough time to, like, really... nurture every performance, and we do have to kind of focus fire on what really needs to get fixed sometimes. And as a guest star or as a co-star, you're the glue in between the different pieces, and the different pieces are the things that typically we have to spend more time on. The TV, the stars of the show, the series regulars, those are the people who you have to kind of craft their performances a little bit more sometimes.
Right. And on commercials, you have to remember that a lot of times the direction is not coming from the director. It's coming from a client or an agency person or someone that does not know about how actors work, really, that doesn't have as much experience. As an actor, the best thing you can do is come to set knowing what Matt said, knowing that if they're moving on, that means you did a good job, knowing that if... you did a couple takes and then they give you a line reading, is that they probably just want some different options for the edit. And just getting that into your mind, whether the director says that to you or not, so that you're not sensitive, you know, and that you're not, your feelings aren't hurt. Because as soon as your feelings are hurt, we can see on camera. Oh,
and it feels terrible too. I love actors. I don't want to hurt their feelings.
Yeah. I think it would be appropriate though if I were directing a scene and I'm kind of giving them all sorts of different directions to kind of find the tone. And if we were to have a moment where we could talk, you know, about what's happening, not, you know, nothing's private on a set, but more one-on-one. And if an actor said to me, hey, just so you know, you can totally give me a line reading or just tell me to stop making a weird face, I'm fine with that. I would go, thank you so much. And then go back 100%. To the monitor. And then that would be appropriate.
Right. Well, and I think that what you're pointing out, the brilliance of that is that, like, that means that the director has carved out some time to have this conversation, right? Like, right. The nightmare scenario is where, you know, we're in the middle of something and someone gets, you get pulled aside by an actor who needs to express this thing. The other thing is, like, I'm trying to think of a situation where this wouldn't feel awkward, but, like, if you're, sometimes actors know that they're not delivering what a director is looking for. If you're on take six of your single and, like, everybody else has gotten two takes and they're like going again, you know, everyone can sense that, oh, I'm not giving you what you want. That might be a moment when, rather than doing 12 more takes, you're like, you kind of maybe do a quick aside. But again, not from a sensitive place, which I think is Oren's great point. You know, like, how to be kind of just open-minded about it and not feel, it's not personal is the problem, you know?
Yeah.
And most,
my bad habit. Oh, sorry.
I was just going to say, most of the time the director is equally frustrated because not every director has the toolkit that an actor has, right? Like, we didn't study acting sometimes, you know, like, sometimes we don't have the right vocabulary. We really want this movie or this TV show or this, you know, this commercial to be great. You know, we got a lot riding on this, and, like, it's our job to help an actor get to where they need to be. And if we don't know how to do that, that's emotional for us as well. And it is different because the vulnerability of being on camera is something special. That's what, you know, Carlin was alluding to. But it's still, we all have skin in the game, I guess is all I'm really trying to say. And we're trying to help each other out. And
well, I recently did a shoot where I forget, the final product just didn't come out that good, some commercial something. And people were like, yeah, it's not your fault. It's just like the performance isn't really good. Like it's, you know, the actors just wasn't that good. It's not your fault. And I'm like, that is my fault. You know, like that's my job is to, if the performance isn't good, is to figure out a way to either get a good performance or to shoot it in a way where it's not as reliant on the performance. Mm-hmm. So I was like, don't tell a director that it's not their fault that a performance isn't good. And so just so you know, like I'm just echoing Matt, what you're saying is, like, as the director, we're trying to figure out why your performance isn't working, too. And we don't think it's because you are a bad actor. We think it's because there's something, like, that's not clicking, whether it's a blocking or the dialogue. It's, 9 out of 10 times, it's a dialogue, by the way.
But if it's not working, I'm always thinking, I must not be communicating something clearly.
Yeah, I'm doing something wrong. Like, how do I fix it? Yeah.
Yeah, so don't take that on you as an actor. That said, some of the best actors I know will figure out how to make things work that don't naturally work, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's the magic.
That just comes with experience.
Bless them.
Truly.
Yeah. A bad habit I'm working on, though I honestly don't know if I'm going to make much progress on it, is I do tend to yell direction like across the set from the monitor to actors, again, because I'm always late on every single shoot I've ever been on. So, you know,
great advertisement
like,
for yourself.
Yeah, I'm not doing like, it's not like emotional love scenes, but I'll be like, let's say just a little faster. You flubbed this word or you did this thing or you did. I sometimes tell actors like, hey, just so you know, I'm going to be yelling things from the monitor. It doesn't mean anything. It's just faster. Part of yelling direction across the room means that I have to talk to all the actors. I recently had some auditions and there were Zoom auditions, of course, and we had some agency people on there. And one of them was also giving direction to the actors, which doesn't bother me at all. You know, they want to see stuff that's good for me. I'd rather not tell the actors, thank you for coming. They leave. And then the agency people want to have notes. I'd rather get them on the day. But we were auditioning 3 actors at a time because we were kind of trying to cast these families. And he said this thing, and it was totally innocent on his side, but you'll hear what it is. But he said to one of the actors, hey, I really love your look. I think you have this great look. So let's just see if we can nail this line. And then, like, can you do this? And he had some direction or whatever. Does that sound bad to you guys? Someone to say that?
You're saying you look great. If you could say it right, you get the role, basically, is what it feels like they're saying.
Yes, but in the context. So, I think it's weird to talk about people's looks in. I think it's okay if the agency's like, ooh, they have a cool look to me, you know. But I don't think you should talk to the actors about their looks during their audition in general. But the other thing is when you're auditioning 3 actors at a time and you tell one of the 3 that you like their look, imagine if you're one of the other actors in the room. Mm-hmm. Like, what are you supposed to think? Like, do they not like my look or did I nail? Like, and so because of that, and I always try to think of what the people in the audition are thinking and on set are thinking. If I tell someone they nailed it and nailed the line, I feel like I have to tell the other actors, hey, that was great too. You know, do that same thing again, do that. I don't know. That's something that I do is I try to force myself to give feedback to everyone just so they don't get self-conscious because you gave great feedback to one actor and not the other. And my wife's been, you know, she's day played on TV shows and she'll go in and they'll give the lead actor like, that was amazing. That was so funny. That was so great. And they'll say nothing to her. And she feels like, you know, absolute crap.
Aww.
And so I think I'm sensitive to that. But do you guys agree, disagree?
I don't think about anyone's feelings. And that's why I get hired. and that's why I'm a hard ass. No, that's really beautiful. You said that. I can be on. I don't think I'm trying to also have a habit of telling even every department head how good of a job they're doing and making them feel appreciated. Maybe I think I do it to actors, but now that you said this, I'm going to make sure that I do it as well. I'm pretty sure that I do.
This is going to be phrased as a real shithead question, but do you say they're doing a great job if they're not?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not about telling them they're doing a great job after every take. It's about not when you have an ensemble, like a cast that is acting in the same scene together. I try to not single out one person in that cast and tell them they are doing great.
But if it's like their coverage, I'm not going to tell everyone who's like shoulders in the frame that they're doing a great job too.
I'll do the worst version. I'll be like, great shoulder acting. And then that's such a backfire. Like, I'm making a joke and they're like, well, great. Now I'm just standing here. Thanks, Matt.
Well, I do that. I don't think it backfires. I say like great backing. Like, ooh, their shoulder looked so good there. Like,
you say great backing?
Back acting, yeah.
You would say that. Honestly, you would say that. That's something that I would never say, but I love that you would say that.
I want to be a fly on the wall at one of Oren's sets where somebody nailed it and he says so, and then he turns out of politeness to be like, you nailed it too, and we all know that they didn't, and see how it goes.
Exactly.
Well, I wouldn't say you nailed it to someone else. First of all, in that situation, I would go with the note first. You know, I'd say like, hey, that was really awesome. We love that. Let's try something different. Let's try one where you're saying it like it's a secret, like you're whispering it to them. And Mike, you know, that was awesome too. Like, just do the same thing. Whatever. So I'll...
That was awesome. Just do the same thing.
I like it.
I won't be like, Mike, you nailed it. Marissa, this time let's try something else, like you're whispering. I would phrase it as...
Participation trophy, director. That's what I'm hearing here.
Yeah, listen, I wish you could see Carlin's face.
I'm like, is this
I wish you could see
true?
Matt's face.
Are you really
do you see Matt's
telling
face, Carlin?
People like off camera that they nailed? Like, Bob, you nailed it.
Yeah. I will say, not to pick on you, Oren, I often will start with, hey, that was great. Yeah, or I'll be like, that was great. Next time, let's do this and this and this. And I say it out of habit to the point where I might as well have not said anything at all. I mean it most of the time when I say that was great, but it just becomes white noise. And then people have just filtered it out, and then they're just kind of looking for the note, looking for the note, looking for the note.
Like, no, I'll say like, cool, that was a great first take. Like, I think we have to work on the blocking a little bit because something's not quite working. Like, I'll never be like, I'll never say I loved something when I didn't love it. And that's actually one of my weaknesses in the business of Hollywood and why I've had trouble attaching to so many things, because I have trouble being excited about stuff I think is bad, you know?
Yeah. Well, you don't want to be attached to stuff that you think is bad.
Well,
at some point, you just want a job, Carlin.
Oh.
Carlin, do you know about the class that Matt's teaching?
No, but you are hyping it up. I can't wait to hear.
I'm actually very excited about it.
That's so funny.
And very nervous.
So cute.
Oren, that's adorable. So nice of you. I feel like you were probably asked as well, right? It wasn't just me.
I didn't get asked.
Too busy. Wow. Well, shout out.
It's not that I was too busy. So first of all, Carlin, tell me this wouldn't. Well, it might not intimidate you because you were an actor, but Matt has to teach a 4-hour class tonight.
Oh, I actually have taught directing actors classes before. So I like, not for 3 hours is maybe the most I've done.
4 hours is legitimately long. Oh, it's at the Lee Strasberg Institute, right?
Yeah,
so method
awesome.
Acting. Very
oh,
cool.
Yeah.
Oren and I did a lecture that I think became an episode with their students a while ago, and they asked me to come in and teach a class, kind of on anything I wanted. I think which is pretty exciting. So, so the first class is going to be on audition technique for commercials, because I thought to myself, what would a method school? What wouldn't they cover? That I have an area of expertise in, basically. Like, how can I help these kids, like, be a little bit more prepared for the nitty-gritty
of
the business? Yeah, exactly. Because they've gotten a lot of art. So I was going to start with just a meet and greet, talk about the nature of making commercials, you know, and why they're cool. Carlin, I imagine when you were at Tisch, what were your attitudes about being in commercials?
We didn't talk shit about commercials. Mm-hmm. And actually, this makes me happy because so I went to Tisch and then I went to film school also at UT Austin. And neither one of maybe if I would I did 2 years at the Stella Adler Conservatory at Tisch. And then after your sophomore year, a lot of people choose to do film and TV acting. But man, I was watching squirrels in Central Park and being a squirrel in class. Mm-hmm. It was so much craft and nothing about the business of what we do. And I do think that's too bad, because it's not, unfortunately, it's not just about craft.
Right. Yeah. I mean,
yeah, but at least you get sheltered from, like, you get to hone your craft before you have to worry about
it. True. True. I always joke, but it's true. I wish I could go back to USC and just teach a business of freelancing.
Yeah. Like, I think about this too.
Like, if you walked out of a class with like an LLC formed and know how to file your taxes and like how to invoice people on time, all the stuff that there's no way I would ever take that class for, and, you know, took a decade to slowly figure out how to do properly.
Even like, what's a manager? What's an agent? Mm-hmm. How do you get them? If the email says people's names and then a thing, like how does all that stuff work? Because you just have to figure it out.
And
it's strange that you don't get taught.
They went in another direction, a class by Matt and Lowe.
Yeah, exactly, right? Oh, Jesus. A class by all of us.
Yeah, right?
That's the life.
So the class, after we kind of talk about commercials, because I think that the prevalent thing, a lot of the acting students I knew, because everyone was in LA, there was this attitude of like, well, you know, it'll probably take me a year or two to get on a TV show, so in the meantime, I'll make money doing commercials, was like a very common attitude.
Pretty interesting attitude. Just like when people tell me they're going to make their feature this year, I go, you do that. See what happens. Have fun.
Fingers crossed. Yeah. but so I thought, what are the things that I could teach them that would help them maybe actually make a little bit of that money, basically?
I'm sure you guys do this, but I'll watch auditions for commercials, and I will say out loud to the monitor, do you actually think I'm going to cast you when I can't see your face? Like, why are you 400 miles away from the camera? You know, and I wish I could communicate those things to actors. And if I was teaching a class tonight, then I would, you know.
We should write. I might text you some things not to do.
Oh, that's great. I'll take you up on that for sure. I'd love that.
Like, recently in an audition, the guy sang a take.
Mm-hmm.
That was odd. It was very strange, and we were like, why is he singing? This is so crazy. It was just like,
did you ask him, or it was on tape?
This was a tape. This was not even the callback.
Mm-hmm.
Started singing a take out of nowhere. Not a musical piece. Yeah. There is a fine line between unhinged and making a strong choice.
Yeah, really tricky. Really tricky.
I have a quick question about commercial auditions for y'all. Every time they like zoom, do that weird thing where they zoom all the way out and then turn to the side and then turn to the other side. And sometimes they do that in a close up too. I'm like, I don't care. Why? It feels like a Tim and Eric sketch every time.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because I was talking to my wife about the class, and she was like, well, one thing that every actor has to do in every single commercial audition is slate. So you have to say your name. Typically they ask for your height. Who you're repped by. Sometimes they'll show their hands. They'll flash their palms and then the backs of their hands. Yeah.
Yes.
And then they'll show you a profile. Too. And I think it's a casting director.
And the men
thing.
Will say if they'll shave or not.
Yeah. And whether they're shaved or not.
I just had a genius idea. I think that they should do all the stuff at the end of the tape, the hands, the zooming out, the profile, because boy, sitting through all that stuff up top. Not
well,
fun.
That's the casting director I work with does slates at the end.
Yeah.
That's and a lot of Kara's recent auditions. I honestly think the Zoom of it all has changed the way people audition. And I think a lot of casting directors are moving to put the slates at the end.
Good.
Because, if it's like Carlin Hudson and then we cut to the take, that's great. But if it's Carlin Hudson, I'm from LA and thank you for having me.
It's
today.
Like 30 it's like, seconds and which is doesn't seem like that much. But when we're watching hundreds of them, that's a 2 hours, you know.
The other day, Carlin texted me. She's like, is it normal to get 300?
I was so mad. I've never had to watch so many because we did I did a twin thing, and they decided that they wanted to try casting real identical twins, but then they also casted non-identical twins. So not only did I have to sit through like all these rounds of identical twins, but also non-twins. And I was like, I'm going to call someone. So mad. Like, this is crazy.
That's so funny.
Yeah. And we did actually end up casting real twins and then one non-twin.
Well, look at that. That's great.
Wow.
Well, yeah. Yeah, that sounds
not
good.
The shoot. It was fun, but the casting. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I think, yeah, and speaking of casting, when we go back to real life, talking about who all of the people behind that fold-out table are, I think is a thing that would be helpful for actors.
Yep.
Who's the director? Who's the client? Or who's the agency people? Who's the agency producer? Why are they all on their phones? We'll cover a lot of that stuff. And then I was going to have them actually, I was going to bring in a spot that I did that I have boards for and the finished spot, and then have them do cold reads, basically give them 10 minutes That's to kind good. Of like, and then have them alternate between, I was going to have one of them direct and one of them, be the reader, and then one of them be the auditioner, so that they understand the weird pressure of being needing to seem like you know what you're talking about as a director, which is a unique sort of thing. And then we'll round robin through all of that.
That sounds awesome. I think I'm really excited to see how it goes and what your experience is. Are you going to bring a camera to?
They have a camera there. They have a camera there. So everyone else will be watching the audition. And so then we'll talk about that. And then eventually I'll show them the storyboards so they can see the difference between what the boards and the final edit. And I think I'll probably do that for two different spots. And I think that'll fill 4 hours.
Oh, yeah. With like a 15, 20 minute break.
Yeah, breaks in there and stuff. I'm going to have a backup third spot.
You'll let everyone audition?
Yeah, everybody auditions, directs, and reads, basically.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's cool. That's fun. Are you going to make everyone like sit on the floor and like take their shoes off and all that other weird acting class stuff?
Maybe? Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're going to start with some animal work and then maybe some sense memory stuff after that.
Nice.
Yeah, you joke, but like, certainly, yeah. Lee Strasberg, I'm sure that they have done some real, you know, out there.
You should do the action exercise.
Ooh.
Wait, what's the action exercise?
The one you talked about.
Oh, I should make them all say action? Oh, that's funny. Maybe I will. For the icebreaker, actually, I thought that the you know, name, you know, where they're from, and whose career they wish they could have, I think is an interesting actor's question, because it kind of orients you in terms of where they're thinking artistically, what type they think they are, all of that stuff. Do you two have directors whose careers you wish you could have?
Yeah. Carlin Hudson.
Oh, shut the fuck up. You want to write my Netflix movie? Honestly, you can.
I'll take your career after you're done.
Yeah. There you go.
I'll do the last round of noticing.
You know, no disrespect to Carlin. You could aim a little bit higher, Oren. You know,
I'm
Carlin.
32.
Carlin's 32. On your way. You're on your way. No disrespect, obviously. Okay, but like, you could pick an Oscar winner, is what I'm saying.
I thought we were friends.
No. I mean, I think if you, what you said, Matt, is that part of the reason you're asking them is because you want to see what kind of, you know, a career they feel is right for them. And I guess to me, I don't know if there are any Oscar winners that are like I connect with, but there are, you know, like there's Gareth Edwards.
Or like James Gunn, you know, you always say you want to do Marvel movies.
I would say like, I always say Adam McKay, personally.
For Oren?
No, for me.
No, for
you. Yeah, yeah. Or yeah,
he's got a good one.
Alexander Payne. Yeah, yeah. I'd pick that for you, Carlin. That seems right. Yeah.
Or like Alex Garland is a career I like. Mm. There was this really horrible thread on Twitter the other day, which was, what's the name of a director whose work you loved and now don't like anymore? And basically every director ever, they're like, J.J. Abrams used to be amazing. No, his stuff is crap. You know, like Denis Villeneuve, like they were just talking about all the best directors.
Yeah, all the best people.
They're like,
what's wrong with Denis Villeneuve? Did I say his name right?
It doesn't matter. He's washed out by
canceled?
Now.
What did he do?
Well, he's,
no, it's just every movie. People love when someone loves the beginning of someone's career. People were talking about Edgar Wright or something.
Okay, well, Edgar Wright, I agree with. I do love his early
Edgar,
stuff.
Not so right. Yeah, but you can't like even Tarantino. People were like, oh, he, you know, genius, and now not so genius. And M. Night. Every director had their breakout films that everybody loves, and then they got money and they made studio film, some succeeded, some didn't, but it's like that attitude of, well, you, I guess you're not good anymore, is just like so destructive and not even like objective in any way.
No, of course not.
Yeah, well,
but yeah, so
wait, who would yours be, Matt?
Oh, I don't know. That's a good question. I mean, I think in the camp of like a Jim Brooks would be great, you know, but he made a lot of bad movies too, for sure.
Oh, I mean, Ryan Coogler has a pretty awesome story too.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go.
Like I guess I think more of people whose career I could emulate as opposed to, mm-hmm. you know, someone from 60 years ago. It's just different, you know, like the movies they made, you couldn't make now and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. That's the hard thing is it's like studios were making, you know, mid-budget comedies back then, and then audiences were going to see them. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. I mean, Ridley Scott, he's another one where people are like, yeah, Aliens is pretty good, but I don't know. And you're like, he's 83 and he's still making these like giant yeah. space sagas on HBO.
Yeah. And also he made like Gladiator in Not his bad. 60s, right? Like, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if there's one thing film school teaches you is engaging in conversations like that is a waste of time and money.
Yep.
Carlin, would you hang out for an unpaid endorsement or two?
Sure.
Unpaid endorsements.
So my unpaid endorsement is a music video called Mesmerized by Duck Sauce. Maybe more recognizable for you, Oren, is the director is Keith Schofield, who does some of the best work in town.
Gives away all his treatments online.
He does give away many of his treatments online.
Really?
So Mesmerize is a music video about some DJs spinning at the club that was made exclusively during COVID with Frameforge, which is a storyboarding, like 3D storyboarding software, and stock footage from Pond 5 with watermarks on it and everything. It basically looks like a very elaborate animatic that then kind of breaks the fourth wall and goes super bonkers. So you're watching the music video and it just kind of looks like a bad animatic, and you're seeing like literally like lens choices, the shot number, you know, narration underneath of like what's happening. And then at a certain point, he'll like go out of Frameforge and into Google and like Google like cool things that happen at clubs and like find things in Reddit. And then like one of them is like, I saw Bruce Willis at a club. Cut to him like searching for 3D models of Bruce Willis and putting that on the Frameforge. And then cut to, you know, the shot of Bruce Willis walking in all static. And it goes even crazier from there.
And what's the music video called?
Called Mesmerize by Duck Sauce. It is not safe for work. It goes real crazy and real raunchy. When I saw it, I was like, oh man, Oren is going to be...
That sounds... Yeah, of course I'm mad.
Yeah, so jealous and impressed all at once, which is, you know, a good state to be.
It only has 271,000 views. So.
I mean, it was worth way more than that for sure. It is legitimately great.
I feel better about it.
Yeah,
that's awesome. That's a really good one, Carlin. Beat it.
I do keep talking about this one episode of a podcast I listened to recently. Do y'all listen to Hidden Brain?
Mm-mm.
No. Part of it, yeah.
There's an episode called Losing Alaska from last week that is about climate change. And I will admit I did run into some climate change deniers at my Dallas hotel bar. And anyways, it kind of helps explain the psychology behind why it's difficult for us to wrap our heads around this imminent thing, you know. And I found it was just fascinating. And I think it's a great podcast in general about like human psychology and the human brain, Hidden Brain. So yeah, Hidden Brain, Losing Alaska is the podcast episode I'm going to recommend.
Awesome. Thanks, Carlin.
And actually, I recently ate a bagel. And so
did you know that
you could cut out the middle of the bagel and lose calories? I can't believe that you pitched that recently. That was... Truly
the second time
was the worst recommendation I've ever heard. Also, like, why are you counting your calories? Now I need to recommend some books about like just listening to your body instead of throwing away the middle of baked goods.
Well, what about, is eating four tubs of ice cream a good idea?
No, but that's called emotional eating. You're not listening to your body's
my
internal
body
signal.
Would happily do that every night.
Oh no.
Yeah,
I'm calling your wife.
Oh my goodness, you guys really don't understand. I don't want to call it anti-Semitism, but all you're making fun of my bagel advice.
All I'm saying is just eat the whole bagel. Just eat the whole bagel. We've had many offline conversations about the best bagels in Los Angeles.
I'm a Maury's advocate. In Dallas. I love Jewish people, obviously.
How are the bagels?
Yeah, Jewish friends. I get it.
I'm just kidding.
One of my best friends, obviously. Take it away, Oren.
Okay. So I have two real quick, only because the first one, I'm sure everyone has seen already. It has 1.7 million views on Twitter, but I actually saw Tony Gapastione, a friend of the podcast, and also Jordan Brady both retweeted this woman, Sarah Schaefer. She's a writer, comedian. Mm-hmm. She put out a video. Have you guys seen it?
I love this. This is great.
The evolution of selling a TV show.
Yeah, how to sell a TV show in 3 easy steps.
Yep.
It's so accurate. It is so accurate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Sell the joke a little bit more because it's not actually 3 steps. I didn't finish the video actually because she starts enumerating. She's like, step 1A.
1A.
I think I stopped around step 1K. I was like, okay, I get the joke, and this is just depressing me.
It's kind of a long video. It's almost 6 minutes. And she basically goes through the painstaking steps of getting your show written, considered, pitched, greenlit, to pilot, picked up.
It's also worth it to point out, Sarah had a show on Comedy Central.
Oh, really?
Yeah. She had a show with Nikki Glaser.
Sarah Schaefer. But yeah, it's just an example of how absolutely difficult and competitive it is to get a TV show sold and on TV. So my other piece of advice, which is accessible to everyone that has AirPods, is did you know that if you lose your AirPods, you can use your phone or iPad or any Apple device, have your AirPods, you can choose the left one or the right one because, you know, a lot of times you just lost the left one somewhere. You can have it play a really loud noise and
locate them.
I've found my wife's lost AirPods in a planter.
Wow.
Using this. And so we were like so bummed because she just got these new AirPods. Put them somewhere.
And this is for any of them, not just the Pro ones?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure any of them. She has the Pros, but I think I saw that mine, which are not the Pros, also can do it. So losing your AirPods, there are some things you can do to get them back. I'm sure it's a pretty common thing. So yeah,
great.
Don't fret.
Very cool.
Anyway, Carlin, thanks so much. Are you still Hey Carlin on the socials?
I'm at Hey Carlin on Twitter. And at Carlin Hudson on Instagram.
Ooh, that's confusing. 2 different accounts.
Look, listen. No. people are, you know what? If they want to find me, they will. And that's all I have to say. It's no problem if they don't feel like searching for 2. It's okay.
Yeah. I make it easy for people. I'm at O Kaplan on Instagram.
I'm at Smitey Pie Leg
on Twitter. You can follow our show at Just Shoot It Pod across all social media.
And you can follow me at Mr. Matt Enlow. You can check out the stuff we talked about on the show at justshootapod.com. Email us any questions or thoughts or a voicemail. Send us a voicemail voice memo at justshootitpod@gmail.com. This episode was edited by one of us, actually. Sarah has a much needed vacation, but she'll be back next week. And our new media maestro is Derek Aiello. And you're listening to music by the artist Jazar, provided by the Free Music Archive. Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Thanks.
Bye.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.